Chapter 2. Catastrophizing Side Effects. Our knowledge system's real track record on climate, 180 degrees wrong. Let's recap. The knowledge system we rely on to give us expert guidance on what to do about fossil fuels is broken. It engages in the indefensible method of evaluation of calling for the rapid elimination of fossil fuels by focusing only on their negative side effects, while ignoring the massive life or death benefits that uniquely cost-effective fossil fuel energy provides to billions of people today and could provide to the billions of people who desperately lack cost-effective energy. The fact that it also supports policies to eliminate non-CO2-emitting, cost-effective nuclear and hydro energy, while ignoring their massive benefits and is unconcerned about widespread opposition to solar and wind energy, reflects a systemic hostility toward cost-effective energy as such. This gives us reason to think that not only is our knowledge system likely giving us terrible guidance, but also that it might be significantly overstating fossil fuels' supposedly catastrophic climate side effects because 1. A knowledge system that ignores all of fossil fuels' benefits will inevitably ignore benefits such as the ability of fossil fuels to significantly neutralize any climate danger caused by CO2 emissions, such as neutralizing heat waves with fossil-fueled air conditioning, neutralizing drought with fossil-fueled irrigation and food transport, neutralizing storms with resilient fossil-fuel built and powered buildings, and so on. 2. A knowledge system that is hostile to cost-effective energy as such will be motivated to overstate its negative side effects. How do we identify whether and how much our knowledge system is distorting fossil fuels' climate side effects? This is difficult to do, given that most of our knowledge system's claims about climate involve predictions. While, as I indicated in Chapter 1, there is ample evidence that our knowledge system's disseminators are distorting what the UN IPCC says about fossil fuels' climate impact so far, most climate concerns have to do with predictions of catastrophic things that will supposedly happen in the relatively near future. Such predictions necessarily rely on highly complex science and models that are difficult for non-researchers to assess. For example, if we hear from our knowledge system that climate models predict 4 degrees Celsius warming in the next 80 years if today's level of fossil fuel use continues, and that will cause unprecedented drought, wildfires, storms, and mass species extinction, how can we assess if those claims are based on the best knowledge and reasoning? While it is hard to directly assess the validity of our knowledge system's predictions about the future of climate, it is both far easier and highly informative to assess our knowledge system's, including designated experts, track record of climate prediction. The track record of an institution or person tells us a lot about how good their thinking methods are, especially how good their predictions are, and how much they deserve to be relied upon today. According to our knowledge system, its own track record on climate is excellent. Knowledge disseminators such as the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Public Communications Department of the UN congratulate themselves for having been right about catastrophic climate change, except that they were a little too conservative. Hence the refrain, climate change is worse than we thought. Designated experts such as Bill McKibben, Al Gore, and James Hansen are portrayed as, in Senator Edward Markey's words describing Hansen, climate prophets who accurately predicted or even underpredicted today's climate situation and thus can be trusted when they tell us that fossil fuels are causing an increasingly dire climate emergency that requires extreme action. If any of this were the case, it would lend a lot of credibility to today's predictions of climate catastrophe. But in fact, a study of our knowledge system's track record on climate reveals that not only has it not been right about climate, it has been 180 degrees wrong. To understand the actual climate track record of our knowledge system and designated experts, we need to understand what has actually happened climate-wise in recent history, so that we can see how designated experts' predictions compare with reality. According to mainstream climate agencies, since 1980, when many designated experts started making predictions of warming, average warming has been approximately 0.18 degrees Celsius per decade. Interestingly, rising CO2 levels correlated with falling temperatures from 1940 to 1980, and before that, there was significant warming with very little CO2. I will explain how this is possible in part 3 of this book. Given the reputation of our designated experts as prescient or even conservative in their predictions, we would expect them to have predicted something like this 0.18 degrees Celsius per decade rise in recent decades. But if you research the public predictions of long-standing designated experts, they prove to have been shockingly wrong. Take James Hansen, arguably the most influential designated expert on climate science. Here's a 1986 New York Times story about a prediction by him. Dr. James E. Hansen of the Goddard Space Flight Center's Institute for Space Studies said research by his institute showed that because of the greenhouse effect that results when gases prevent heat from escaping the Earth's atmosphere, global temperatures would rise early in the next century. Average global temperatures would rise by 0.5 degree to 1 degree Fahrenheit, 0.28 to 0.56 degrees Celsius, from 1990 to 2000, if current trends are unchanged, according to Dr. Hansen's findings. Dr. Hansen said that the global temperature would rise by another 2 to 4 degrees, 1.11 to 2.22 degrees Celsius, in the following decade. But let's look at some data from the NASA department Hansen ran for decades. Hansen predicted a 0.5 to 1 degree Fahrenheit, 0.28 to 0.56 degrees Celsius change in the 1990s, and the reality was a 0.12 degrees Celsius change. That's off by a factor of 2 to 4. Hansen predicted a 1 to 2 degrees Celsius change in the 2000s, and the reality was 0.19 degrees Celsius, overstated by a factor of 5 to 10. Or take the United Nations, home of the prestigious IPCC, part of the United Nations Environment Program, UNEP. Today, UN spokespeople attract headlines when they tell us, just over a decade is all that remains to stop irreversible damage from climate change, and say we need to rapidly eliminate fossil fuel use or face disaster. But we are not told that they've been making similarly apocalyptic claims for many decades. For example, in 1989, the Associated Press reported a set of climate predictions from New York office director of the UN Environmental Program, Noel Brown, including that entire nations could be wiped off the face of the Earth by rising sea levels if the global warming trend is not reversed by the year 2000, and that the most conservative scientific estimate would be that the Earth's temperature will rise 1 to 7 degrees in the next 30 years. The temperature rise since Brown's conservative prediction has barely reached the low end of his most conservative scientific estimate, and we are more than 20 years past the year 2000 with record fossil fuel use, and there is nothing resembling entire nations being wiped off the face of the Earth by rising sea levels. I want to emphasize that wildly overstated public climate predictions were not made by most climate researchers, but by designated experts, those that the knowledge system relied on as spokespeople for all climate researchers. Many researchers made more accurate predictions, or argued that accurate prediction was impossible, but those researchers were largely ignored in favor of those who made extreme negative predictions, a phenomenon we will see repeat itself over and over. Now, one might think, even if there has been much less warming than designated experts publicly predicted, haven't they been right or even too conservative about how much greater climate danger we face as a result of warming? After all, we constantly hear that heat waves, droughts, floods, storms, and wildfires are worse than expected. In reality, our designated experts' predicted levels of climate devastation make their wildly wrong temperature predictions look like bullseyes. John Holdren, President Barack Obama's top science advisor, had a particularly dire prediction, according to close collaborator Paul Ehrlich, in 1986. As University of California physicist John Holdren has said, it is possible that carbon dioxide climate-induced famines could kill as many as a billion people before the year 2020. Given that our knowledge system is continually conveying that climate is getting more dangerous. When I first researched this issue, I knew that Holdren's prediction was a wild overestimate, but I figured it was still in the right direction. Climate deaths had to be increasing. But then I learned a fact that changed my perspective from that point on. Early on in my research on fossil fuels, I was fortunate enough to come across an international nonpartisan dataset, the International Disaster Database, that keeps a record of disasters and their impacts, including climate-related disasters such as droughts, floods, storms, and extreme temperatures, all the things that are supposedly getting worse. Here's what blew my mind. Over the last century, as CO2 emissions have rapidly increased, the climate death rate fell by an incredible 98%. That means the average person is 50 times less likely to die of a climate-related cause than they were in the 1920s. The first time I read this statistic, I didn't think it was possible. But rechecking the data repeatedly, I found that this was indeed the case. The rate of climate-related disaster deaths has fallen by 98% over the last century. This means that not only does our knowledge system ignore the massive life-or-death benefits of fossil fuels, but it has a track record of being 180 degrees wrong about the supposedly catastrophic side effect of climate danger, which has dramatically decreased. How could our knowledge system have gotten climate so wrong? The error of catastrophizing. Part of where our knowledge system went wrong in falsely predicting climate catastrophe was designating as experts those who wildly overpredicted any negative climate impacts of fossil fuels, both the amount of warming and any negative consequences of warming, such as increased droughts, wildfires, dangerous storms, and sea level rises. But wildly overpredicting negative climate impacts doesn't explain how our knowledge system and designated experts were 180 degrees wrong. It doesn't explain how climate has become far safer when they predicted it would become far more dangerous. A dramatic reduction in climate-related death has to be the result of at least one of two factors. One, an improvement in the state of climate conditions, and or two, an improvement in the state of our ability to protect ourselves from climate. Which of these has changed dramatically for the better? It's not climate conditions. While climate conditions cannot have gotten anywhere near as bad as our knowledge system portrays today, and they hypothetically could have improved somewhat, warming is desirable in many places, plus CO2 contributes to plant growth, nothing positive in climate conditions could possibly have happened that could explain our being 50 times safer from climate danger. The dramatic change has to be an improvement in our ability to protect ourselves from climate dangers such as extreme temperatures, drought, storms, floods, and wildfires. How have we gotten so good at protecting ourselves from climate? In large part by using fossil-fueled machine labor. We use fossil-fueled construction machines to build sturdy buildings. We use fossil-fueled heating machines to produce warmth when it's cold, and fossil-fueled cooling machines to produce cool air when it's hot. We use fossil-fueled irrigation machines to alleviate drought. To put the relationship between fossil fuels and our safety from climate in a sentence, ultra-cost-effective fossil fuel energy powers the machines that produce unprecedented protection from climate. The fact that fossil-fueled machine labor makes us far safer from climate has enormous implications for how we think about the environmental side effects of fossil fuels and other forms of energy. We are typically taught that whatever the benefits of fossil fuels or other forms of energy are, they always come at the expense of our environmental safety and health. But the history of climate safety shows that fossil-fueled machine labor makes us far safer from climate, a phenomenon I call climate mastery. Adaptation, the term often used, does not do justice to the power of this phenomenon or its dependence on cost-effective energy. And as we'll see, fossil-fueled machine labor makes possible other types of environmental mastery, such as transforming naturally dirty water into unnaturally clean water. Any evaluation of fossil fuels' effects on climate danger must include 1. a precise, undistorted account of CO2 side effects on climate conditions, and two, the climate mastery benefits that can neutralize and overwhelm many negative side effects. The reason that our designated experts have been 180 degrees wrong on climate danger is that they have done exactly the opposite. One, wildly overpredicting the negative climate side effects of fossil fuels, and two, ignoring the climate mastery benefits that come with them. The particular error our designated experts made on climate is an instance of a broader error I call catastrophizing. Catastrophizing is the practice of falsely predicting catastrophe through a combination of wildly overpredicting negative side effects of a human activity and ignoring human beings' ability to master those negative side effects by neutralizing and overwhelming them. As we see with climate, catastrophizing can distort reality so much that it can lead smart people to predict catastrophe, such as John Holdren's prediction of up to a billion climate-related deaths, even when the reality is an improvement in life, plummeting climate-related deaths contributed to by fossil-fueled climate mastery. I want to stress again that it was not all researchers who catastrophized fossil fuels climate side effects, but rather our designated experts. The takeaway isn't that climate researchers can't be trusted, but that our knowledge system has a track record of designating as experts catastrophizers who predict far greater negative side effects than most researchers and who ignore human beings' fossil-fueled ability to master those side effects. Is catastrophizing happening once again with today's expert claims of looming climate apocalypse? Knowing that our knowledge system consistently ignores the benefits of cost-effective energy and has a track record of catastrophizing its climate side effects, we should suspect the answer is yes. And when we look a little further back at our knowledge system's track record on climate, as well as its track record on other environmental side effects of cost-effective energy, we find that just as it consistently ignores the benefits of cost-effective energy, it also consistently catastrophizes the side effects of cost-effective energy. The expert prediction of catastrophic global cooling. Before our knowledge system told the general public that the experts predicted rapid catastrophic global warming, it told the general public that the experts predicted catastrophic global cooling. This claim became popular in the late 1960s and through the 1970s when, despite rising CO2 levels, the world was cooling due to other climate variables. Studying the track record of our knowledge system reveals many confident predictions of catastrophic global cooling featuring leading designated experts, including some of today's designated experts. For example, a passage from Ehrlich and Holdren's Global Ecology warned of the reduced transparency of the atmosphere to incoming light as a result of urban air pollution, smoke, aerosols, agricultural air pollution, dust, and volcanic ash. This screening phenomenon is said to be responsible for the present world cooling trend. Moreover, other effects besides simple screening by air pollution threaten to move us in the same direction. In particular, a mere 1% increase in low cloud cover would decrease the surface temperature by 0.8 degrees Celsius. We may be in the process of providing just such a cloud increase and more. It is now widely recognized that not only were predictions of rapid catastrophic global cooling false, but they did not represent the views of most climate researchers. And yet the mainstream knowledge systems disseminators promoted confident cooling predictions as representing the best researchers, designating as experts catastrophizers who did not remotely represent what most researchers, let alone the best researchers, thought. Take the example of the late Stanford climate researcher Stephen Schneider, who later, like Holdren and Ehrlich, became a designated expert on catastrophic global warming. In the 1970s, he was a designated expert on catastrophic global cooling. A New York Times piece in 1976 portrayed Schneider as a young climatologist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado, reflecting the consensus of the climatological community. What was this consensus? Note the confidence of the following two passages. The climate is going to get unreliable. It is going to get cold. Harvest failures and regional famines will be more frequent. and climatologists can predict what temperature averages and extremes to expect over the next 10, 20, or 30 years, and they are predicting greater fluctuations and a cooling trend for the Northern Hemisphere. While Ehrlich's, Holdren's, and Schneider's views in no way represented what most climate researchers thought, let alone what the best climate researchers thought, their catastrophic predictions were widely disseminated by the knowledge system, which often claimed that they were based on a consensus of climate scientists. Here are some claims from the 1970s by trusted news institutions that today are warning us about catastrophic global warming. The Guardian, 1974. Space satellites show new ice age coming fast. Newsweek, 1975. The cooling world. Climatologists are pessimistic that political leaders will take any positive action to compensate for the climatic change or even to allay its effects. The New York Times, 1978. International team of specialists finds no end in sight to 30-year cooling trend in Northern Hemisphere. The lesson of the global cooling scare is the same as that of the predictions of mass climate death from global warming. Our knowledge system is perfectly capable of falsely designating catastrophizers as speaking for all researchers, even when they do not represent most researchers whatsoever, meaning that it could easily be doing the same when it tells us that the experts today think fossil fuels should be eliminated to avert climate catastrophe. If our knowledge system just had a track record of catastrophizing climate cooling and climate warming, that would be enough to call it into extreme suspicion when it claims catastrophic warming today. But looking further at the track record of our knowledge system, we find that not only is it capable of catastrophizing fossil fuel side effects and falsely promoting catastrophizers as spokespeople for all researchers, but it actually has a very strong tendency to do so. Our knowledge system's track record on the side effects of cost-effective energy consists of catastrophizing one side effect of cost-effective energy after another without admitting its problem, let alone solving it. This includes catastrophizing fossil fuel side effects in two other areas fossil fuels were also supposed to ruin, but actually improved: resource availability and environmental quality. Catastrophizing resources. In addition to having a track record of catastrophizing fossil fuels in the realm of climate, our knowledge system also has a long track record of catastrophizing fossil fuels in the realm of resource availability. Throughout the 1960s and early 1970s, the mainstream knowledge system prominently featured claims of a fossil-fueled resource depletion catastrophe made by seemingly impressive designated experts. The leader of this movement was Stanford University ecologist Paul Ehrlich, one of our knowledge system's longest-standing designated experts. The movement's basic argument was this: humanity is consuming a lot of resources. This is largely caused by fossil fuel use, which enables us to consume far more resources than we otherwise would, by enabling us to mine for resources, drill for resources, and transport resources far more quickly than we once could. Our enormous resource consumption is unsustainable and will quickly end in disastrous shortages of numerous resources, including non-renewable fossil fuels themselves, which will lead to mass suffering and death. Throughout the late 1960s and early 1970s, Ehrlich predicted that resource depletion, including fossil fuel depletion, plus an increasing population, would lead to a population bomb and mass starvation unless dramatic government measures were taken. In 1971, Ehrlich said, "By the year 2000, the United Kingdom will be simply a small group of impoverished islands inhabited by some 70 million hungry people." And in 1974, he wrote, "America's economic joyride is coming to an end. There will be no more cheap, abundant energy, no more cheap, abundant food." Because it may seem impossible to believe that someone with such obviously wrong predictions was designated by the mainstream knowledge system as an expert we should listen to, I want to emphasize that Ehrlich was not only an expert, he was the expert on the negative side effects of fossil fuel use and of mass consumption more broadly. Ehrlich was so popular and prestigious that Johnny Carson invited him onto his show over a dozen times. And, as I documented in Chapter 1, he has been showered with praise and awards throughout his career. Another designated expert predicting catastrophic resource depletion at the time was the Club of Rome, a leading international think tank. In 1972, the club released a multi-million copy-selling book, The Limits to Growth, which declared that its state-of-the-art computer models had demonstrated that continued growth in consumption, which occurred, would have exceeded the available resources of gold, silver, copper, zinc, natural gas, and petroleum by today. What actually happened? Fossil fuel use and other resource use increased, which should have led to an even faster decline of resources, especially fossil fuels themselves. But in fact, the availability of fossil fuels and other resources dramatically increased.
I'll start with available fossil fuel resources.
Let's look at what has happened to proved reserves, a popular measure of fossil fuel resources. Proved reserves means the amount of coal, oil, or gas that is considered viable to produce given today's technology, market conditions, and knowledge. Let's look at reserves from 1980 to the present for oil and gas, the fossil fuels we are traditionally afraid will run out. Coal is much easier to find and extract and is considered to be the fossil fuel least likely to run out. The data show that the more we consume, the more reserves increase. How did the designated experts get it 180 degrees wrong again? Once again, they were catastrophizing, wildly overstating negative side effects, and ignoring benefits to falsely predict catastrophe. Let's start with wildly overstating side effects. In this case, the significance of the depletion that would occur as we continued using fossil fuels. Catastrophizing designated experts wildly distorted how large fossil fuel use was relative to the amount of raw fossil fuel that exists in the Earth. They were seemingly unaware that 10-plus times more oil and gas, let alone coal, exist in the Earth than humanity has used in its entire history, meaning that imminent depletion was impossible. Catastrophizing designated experts also ignored the fact that humanity keeps getting better at using fossil fuels to power the machines that enable us to transform more of the world's massive stockpile of raw fossil fuels into usable fossil fuel reserves. For example, using fossil-fueled machines that fracture once useless shale rocks, today's oil and gas industry cost-effectively produces via fracking over 100 billion gallons of oil a year that were in the past considered unavailable. I call the phenomenon of transforming unusable raw materials into usable resources resource mastery. Just as designated experts ignored fossil fuels' massive climate mastery benefits when predicting climate catastrophe, they also ignored fossil fuels' massive resource mastery benefits when they predicted resource catastrophe. Just as fossil-fueled resource mastery led to more fossil fuels, it also led to more of every kind of resource being available, including the gold, mercury, silver, copper, zinc, natural gas, and petroleum the Club of Rome had predicted would have run out by now. Fossil-fueled machines made it possible to produce more of these resources, as well as to produce more of everything else, including record amounts of food, which have made today's world of nearly 8 billion better fed than the world of 3.5 billion in the 1960s. I stress again, as I did with climate, that the designated experts were catastrophizers, not that all researchers were. There were other experts in resources, such as MIT's M.A. Edelman and University of Maryland's Julian Simon, who predicted correctly that fossil fuel resources and other resources would expand. But just as with climate, the mainstream knowledge system chose to designate the catastrophizers as experts. This was not due to their superior qualifications. While Edelman and Simon were resource economists, Paul Ehrlich's primary background was in the study of butterflies. I will explain what it is due to in Chapter 3. Catastrophizing environmental quality. Not only does our knowledge system's track record consist of catastrophizing fossil fuel side effects in the realm of climate, warming and cooling, and resources, when fossil fuels actually improve those areas, its track record also includes catastrophizing still another area that fossil fuels improved: environmental quality. In the 1960s and 1970s, while our knowledge system featuring impressive-seeming designated experts, was telling us that fossil fuels were going to run out very soon, it was also predicting that continuing mass fossil fuel use, if fossil fuels did not immediately run out, would cause an ever more polluted and unhealthy environment, with catastrophic declines in air and water quality. Ehrlich predicted in 1970 that worsening air pollution is certainly going to take hundreds of thousands of lives in the next few years alone. Ecologist Kenneth Watt, another designated expert, predicted, at the present rate of nitrogen buildup, it's only a matter of time before light will be filtered out of the atmosphere and none of our land will be usable. Such catastrophic claims were broadcast and repeated by trusted news sources. The mainstream publication Life magazine reported in January 1970 that, because of particles emitted into the air by burning fossil fuels, scientists have solid experimental and theoretical evidence to support the following predictions. In a decade, urban dwellers will have to wear gas masks to survive air pollution. By 1985, air pollution will have reduced the amount of sunlight reaching Earth by one half. The story was the same in the realm of water quality. According to Ehrlich in 1970, the oceans will be as dead as Lake Erie in less than a decade. And America will be subject to water rationing by 1974. Given that fossil fuel use increased following these predictions, environmental quality around the world should have gotten catastrophically bad, something that Ehrlich said could not be prevented by mere pollution control technology. Pollution control is like prescribing aspirin for a patient who has cancer. But just as climate safety and resource availability increased as fossil fuel use increased, so did environmental quality in most of the world. Let's look first at water quality. While our knowledge system warned that the pollution side effects of fossil fuel use would make water worse and worse, in fact, water quality has gotten far better around the world, thanks in large part to fossil fuels. While fossil fuels can certainly contaminate water, human ingenuity makes us better and better at producing more fossil fuel energy with less pollution. More on that in a moment. Thus, predictions that water pollution problems from fossil fuels would be worse and worse were just wrong. That said, the most significant way in which fossil fuels have contributed to improving water quality is not the decline in their own water pollution, but rather their use in producing unprecedented amounts of clean water around the world. Just as fossil-fueled machine labor increases the safety of climate and the availability of resources, so it improves water quality. Expanded fossil fuel use has powered the construction and operation of water pumping systems that can bring water from where it is to where it's needed, and water purification systems that can transform dirty water into drinkable water. Once again, in the case of water, the designated experts catastrophize fossil fuel side effects by wildly overstating the negative side effects themselves and by ignoring fossil fuels' environmental mastery benefits. Now let's look at air quality. Measurements from the EPA of the six major air pollutants over the last 5 decades show that as fossil fuel use goes up, they go down. What happened? Ingenious human beings figured out ways to produce more fossil fuel with less pollution, that is, to reduce the side effects of fossil fuels through environmental mastery. We know that there are places such as China that have high levels of smog. But the track record of the rest of the world indicates that this can be corrected as appropriate while using ever-increasing amounts of fossil fuel. I say as appropriate because when pollution control costs money, it makes sense that people in poorer countries will choose to have more pollution if that means they will also have more food, clothing, shelter, sanitation, and medical care. One other respect in which fossil fuels have led to improved air quality is in replacing dirtier fuels, namely the wood and animal dung that dominate the poorest parts of the world. Because everyone needs energy for heating and cooking, and wood and dung, often burned indoors, are usually the sources people default to, the use of fossil fuels to replace wood and dung has improved air quality for hundreds of millions of people. Expanding fossil fuel use is a major reason why the World Bank statistic Access to Clean Fuels and Technologies for Cooking increased from 49% of the world in 2000 to 59% of the world in 2016. That's some 750 million people who now breathe far cleaner air, yet another ignored benefit of fossil fuel use. There is an undeniable pattern here. On climate, on resources, and environmental quality, our knowledge system's track record on fossil fuels' environmental side effects is consistent catastrophizing, wildly overstating the negative side effects and ignoring the environmental mastery benefits that can neutralize or even overwhelm them, to the point that it predicts utter catastrophe and the reality turns out to be a dramatic improvement in life. And it gets even worse. Our knowledge system also has a track record of catastrophizing the side effects of the most promising long-term alternative to fossil fuels, nuclear energy, engaging in even more brazen distortions of science than it has used for fossil fuels, suggesting that its hostility toward cost-effective energy as such will drive it to catastrophize with even the scantest of evidence. Catastrophizing nuclear energy. In the previous chapter, I observed that our knowledge system's consistent support of energy elimination policies, while ignoring the massive benefits of cost-effective energy, can be explained only by some hostility to cost-effective energy as such, and that hostility could very well drive our knowledge system to overstate the negative side effects of fossil fuels going forward. Now that we have seen our knowledge system come up with four different 180-degree false catastrophes for ultra-cost-effective fossil fuel energy, catastrophic global warming, global cooling, resource depletion, and pollution, it seems definitive that our knowledge system's hostility toward cost-effective energy will drive it to consistently overstate the negative side effects of fossil fuels and other forms of cost-effective energy via catastrophizing. But if there was any doubt about this, our knowledge system's track record of catastrophizing nuclear energy removes it. Nuclear energy, as I mentioned in the last chapter, has historically been the most promising competitor to fossil fuels. Like fossil fuels, it involves a naturally stored, concentrated, and abundant source of energy. It has already produced relatively low-cost, extremely reliable electricity around the world. It has shown promising applications for industrial process heat and heavy-duty transportation. And it emits no air pollution or CO2, and has the best safety track record of any form of energy. Nuclear's remarkable cleanliness and safety flow from the basic, well-established nature of nuclear energy production. The radioactive material involved, usually uranium-235, produces very high levels of heat in very small spaces without burning. It produces amounts of radiation that are far from harmful to human beings outside the reactor. In fact, higher amounts of radiation than human beings are exposed to outside a nuclear reactor may even be slightly beneficial, just as moderate amounts of sunlight, a form of radiation, are beneficial to humans. And the nuclear material literally cannot explode. Nuclear plants can melt down, overheat, if they are not cooled properly, but even in worst-case scenarios, the non-explosive nature of nuclear means there is ample time to react and avoid dangerous radiation. This is why in the civilized world, there are zero documented deaths from nuclear radiation from commercial reactors. Zero! And yet most of us think of nuclear energy as very dangerous, because our knowledge system has catastrophized it despite not a shred of plausibility from the fields of nuclear science or engineering. It has done this above all by distorting the issue of nuclear radioactivity. Absent proper safety technology, human exposure to large amounts of radioactivity can lead to radiation poisoning or, in the longer term, cancers. At the same time, below a certain threshold, radioactivity is not harmful. We ourselves are radioactive and emit radioactivity. But the mainstream knowledge system has long portrayed radioactivity as inherently deadly. So when we hear about seemingly large amounts of radiation coming from, for example, the Fukushima accident, it sounds scary. Even though the amount is not enough to cause anyone to die when the radiation occurs, from radiation poisoning, or in the future, from cancer. The catastrophizing of nuclear is particularly notable because unlike the issue of CO2 emissions, where the effects are extremely hard for current science to accurately predict, the science of nuclear energy side effects is straightforward. I have never encountered any actual researcher in nuclear science who treats nuclear energy as anything resembling the catastrophic danger we are taught to think of it as. And yet our knowledge systems disseminators have for decades portrayed nuclear as uniquely dangerous, including designating as experts people who are not nuclear scientists, such as Ehrlich, Lovins, and an extremely influential anti-nuclear scientist, but not a nuclear scientist, named Barry Commoner. This catastrophizing has had terrible consequences. Nuclear has been so successfully catastrophized by our knowledge system and designated experts that it is virtually criminalized. The extremely safe levels of radiation are treated as so dangerous that every aspect of building and operating nuclear plants is subject to endless costly safety equipment requirements and endless delays that make cost-effective nuclear almost impossible. For example, as of 2021, since the advent of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in 1975, no new nuclear power plant in the U.S. has been conceived and completed. Our knowledge system's track record of catastrophizing nuclear makes clear two things. One, our knowledge system definitely has some kind of hostility to cost-effective energy as such. Nothing else can explain the consistency with which it A, supports energy elimination policies while ignoring the massive benefits of cost-effective energy, and B, catastrophizes the side effects of cost-effective energy. Two, our knowledge system's capacity to catastrophize is so egregious that it is capable of catastrophizing the safest energy technology ever invented, including wildly misrepresenting the state of science to the point of contradicting every knowledgeable researcher in the field. What does this mean for our knowledge system's current predictions of climate catastrophe? It does not mean that they are totally false. Just because we have a catastrophizing knowledge system doesn't mean that rising CO2 levels are not catastrophic. What our knowledge system's consistent anti-science catastrophizing of cost-effective energy does mean, though, is that its current predictions of climate catastrophe today could be totally false. Our knowledge system has proven itself to be totally untrustworthy on every aspect of the question of fossil fuels, including its climate side effects. We should assume that anything we hear from the knowledge system today about fossil fuels involves catastrophizing, and that any designated expert we are told represents all experts is in fact a catastrophizer. Unless, that is, our knowledge system has acknowledged its terrible track record, identified the massive mistakes that led to it, and has taken steps to correct those massive mistakes. An uncorrected failure. If today's mainstream knowledge system functioned at all properly, it would acknowledge its own track record of catastrophizing the side effects of fossil fuels as a crisis, eagerly seeking to understand the cause, and then taking aggressive steps to correct it. Past designated experts who made horrendously wrong evaluations would be taken to task. Their errors would be acknowledged, analyzed, corrected, and apologized for. And the knowledge system would ask and answer the question of why it designated some of the worst thinkers in various scientific fields, the usually small minority of catastrophizers, as the experts. And there is some reason to expect this might be the case, especially where scientists are concerned. One of the virtues of science is that it is self-correcting. For example, the commonly accepted explanation for gastric ulcers revolved around stress, as well as too much acid in the stomach. But when scientist Barry Marshall empirically showed, using himself as a guinea pig, that the root cause of most ulcers was the Helicobacter pylori bacterium, the medical community, which had previously shown resistance to Marshall's hypothesis, began to adopt it with great results. We might expect that our designated experts, who are either scientists or closely allied with scientists, would acknowledge their errors and evolve. But looking at the history of these designated experts' ideas, I have found no soul-searching by these experts. Instead, I have found evasions about their track records and even repeated claims of vindication, including the lie that they were basically right, or even that it's worse than we thought. In 2012, James Hansen penned an op-ed for the Washington Post where he announced, "Climate change is here and worse than we thought," after patting himself on the back for having warned us in 1988 of the kind of future that climate change would bring to us and our planet, he declared, "I have a confession to make. I was too optimistic." This is the same James Hansen, who who publicly overpredicted warming by more than a factor of 3. According to Bill McKibben in 2009, every time we thought we understood something about climate, the truth has turned out to be worse than we thought. And 7 years later, the numbers on global warming are even scarier than we thought. This is the same Bill McKibben who wrote in 1989 that a few more decades of ungoverned fossil fuel use and we burn up, to put it bluntly. And the choice of doing nothing, of continuing to burn ever more oil and coal, is not a choice, in other words. It will lead us, if not straight to hell, then straight to a place with a similar temperature. It is beyond disappointing that these individuals were unwilling to admit the scope of their errors, and it is to their permanent discredit. When designated experts make 180-degree wrong predictions and fail to acknowledge their failure, it is the job of the broader knowledge system, especially disseminators such as leading newspapers, to reject them and designate far better experts, as well as to analyze the knowledge system's own failures in elevating these catastrophizers. But our knowledge system has not rejected its failed experts, nor acknowledged its failure in elevating them. Instead, it has lionized them and elevated them to greater heights. For example, John Holdren became chief science advisor to President Barack Obama. Bill McKibben is called the nation's leading environmentalist because he leads environmental policy around the world. Paul Ehrlich is still one of the most influential environmental thinkers in the world. Thus, our knowledge system not only has a track record of catastrophizing the side effects of cost-effective energy, it has an uncorrected track record of doing so, which means it is guaranteed to catastrophize the side effects of fossil fuels going forward, in addition to ignoring fossil fuels' massive life-or-death benefits, which is a prescription for absolutely catastrophic policies. Deadly prescriptions. In this chapter and the last, I have demonstrated that the knowledge system giving us the alleged expert guidance to rapidly eliminate fossil fuels consistently ignores the massive life-or-death benefits of cost-effective energy and has an uncorrected track record of consistently catastrophizing the side effects of cost-effective energy. This means that our knowledge system is 100% capable of calling for the rapid elimination of fossil fuels, even if continuing fossil fuel use would be an enormous benefit, rising CO2 levels would continue to be completely masterable, and therefore rapid elimination of fossil fuels would be totally unnecessary and totally catastrophic for billions. I believe this not only because it follows logically from the nature of our knowledge system, but also because many of our knowledge system's long-standing designated experts have a track record of doing just that, calling for rapid elimination of fossil fuels decades ago, when we can be certain it was unnecessary and would have been catastrophic for billions. Recall that today there are billions of people who use virtually no energy and therefore live lives of manual labor and poverty. As bad as that is, the situation in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s was far worse. For example, as recently as 1980, energy use was half of what it is today, and extreme poverty, living on less than $2 a day, was 4 times more common, afflicting over 40% of the world's population. At a time when energy was even more desperately needed than today, designated experts still called for dramatic cuts that would necessarily have disempowered billions. For example, Paul Ehrlich wrote in 1971, "Power companies should be forbidden to encourage people to use more power. Power is much too cheap. It should certainly be made more expensive." In 1998, Bill McKibben endorsed a scenario of outlawing 60% of fossil fuel use to slow catastrophic climate change, even though that would mean, in his words, that each human being would get to produce 1.69 metric tons of carbon dioxide annually, which would allow you to drive an average American car 9 miles a day. By the time the population increased to 8.5 billion in about 2025, you'd be down to 6 miles a day. If you carpooled, you'd have about 3 pounds of CO2 left in your daily ration, enough to run a highly efficient refrigerator. Forget your computer, your TV, your stereo, your stove, your dishwasher, your water heater, your microwave, your water pump, your clock. Forget your light bulbs, compact fluorescent or not. In the past, as today, designated experts expressed little concern about losing the massive life-or-death benefits that fossil fuels provide. In fact, some explicitly argued that energy wasn't that important, that we were already using too much of it anyway. A 1975 opinion piece by Holdren, titled "Too Much Energy Too Soon, a Hazard," explained, "The United States is threatened far more by the hazards of too much energy too soon than by the hazards of too little too late." In 1977, Amory Lovins explained that we already used too much energy, and in particular, the kind of energy we least needed was electricity, which became the foundation of the digital revolution. We don't need any more big electric generating stations. We already have about twice as much electricity as we can use to advantage. Sometimes the designated experts would also, as they do today, dismiss concerns about energy deprivation by making flimsy claims that solar or wind, despite being a small minority of energy, could somehow rapidly replace fossil fuels. For example, Lovins, who today argues that solar and wind can easily replace fossil fuels, wrote in 1976, "Recent research suggests that a largely or wholly solar economy can be constructed in the United States with straightforward soft technologies that are now demonstrated and now economic or nearly economic." But claims like Lovins proved to be baseless. While many countries wanted solar and wind, and in fact used a lot of their citizens' money to pay for solar and wind, no one has yet come close to figuring out cost-effective ways to take sunlight and wind, which are dilute and intermittent forms of energy, and turn them into low-cost, on-demand energy for a versatile array of machines on a global scale. Thus, the calls of designated experts to rapidly restrict or eliminate fossil fuel use were necessarily calls to rapidly restrict or eliminate energy use as such, in order to avoid supposed catastrophes in climate, resources, and environmental quality, which turned out to be areas that fossil fuels made far better. We can now be certain that rapid fossil fuel elimination policies would have been catastrophic for billions of people, prematurely ending billions of lives, preventing the decrease of extreme poverty, and causing an incalculable amount of suffering. Remember, we're talking about a world before China, India, and others used enormous amounts of fossil fuels to industrialize and lift literally billions out of poverty. Policies to rapidly eliminate fossil fuel use back then would certainly have stopped the computer and internet revolutions and certainly prevented billions of people from lifting themselves out of poverty. Billions more would be in the situation of the mother in the Gambia who has to watch her premature baby die because there is no reliable electricity for an incubator. Today we are told to listen to the scientists, which really means listen to our knowledge system, especially its energy-opposing, benefit-ignoring, side-effect-catastrophizing designated experts. When I learned about the true track record of our designated experts' prescriptions, I had the thought, I'm so glad the world didn't listen to these experts to anywhere near the extent the designated experts wanted. The world has not, after all, rapidly eliminated fossil fuel use since the 1970s. It has nearly doubled it. Which raises the question, what prevented our designated environmental experts' catastrophic fossil fuel policies, for the most part, from being implemented? And can we expect that same protection from potentially catastrophic expert policies today? Our missing protection. What prevented our designated experts' terrible energy elimination policies, for the most part, from being implemented? A factor that is, unfortunately, no longer in place. They were substantially marginalized by a mainstream knowledge system that, unlike today, placed significant value on cost-effective energy. As I discussed in the previous chapter, today's designated experts on what to do about fossil fuels are overwhelmingly called environmental experts,
which in practice means their focus is on human beings' negative environmental impacts, especially the negative side effects of fossil fuels. In the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, as we have seen, benefit ignorers and catastrophizers were very inaccurately designated as the environmental experts. But unlike today, the knowledge system didn't only consult environmental experts when it came to fossil fuels, it also consistently consulted experts on energy economics, who knew well that there would be catastrophic consequences to rapidly restricting fossil fuel use. The knowledge system didn't make addressing the alleged catastrophes that designated environmental experts predicted, such as catastrophic climate change, top public priorities. The biggest issue that designated environmental experts raised was air and water pollution, which became a top priority in the 1970s, but it was handled largely in a much more pro-fossil fuel, pro-technology way than the designated environmental experts wanted it to be. To be clear, energy-opposing, benefit-ignoring, side-effect-catastrophizing designated environmental experts have had extremely significant influence already in restricting fossil fuel use. For example, internationally, there are many bans on fracking, a process for extracting oil and gas from shale rock that has revolutionized U.S. energy production and could be used far more to extract oil and gas around the world. Domestically, over the last decade, mandates of renewable energy have driven up U.S. electricity prices, even as the prices of natural gas and coal, the basis of most electricity generation, fell significantly. So while the designated environmental experts have had major policy influence to slow the growth of fossil fuel use around the world, they did not come close to determining the overall energy policy of the U.S. and other nations, because they were counterbalanced by energy experts and more broadly by a knowledge system that placed significant value on energy. Today, the situation is much, much different. As we have seen, our knowledge system's ignoring of the benefits of cost-effective energy is so severe that designated environmental experts are considered the only relevant experts. They are the scientists we are supposed to listen to, not energy experts. The knowledge system as a whole has been overtaken by the horrific approach to evaluating energy that was previously relegated to our designated environmental experts, supporting energy elimination policies while ignoring the massive life-or-death benefits of cost-effective energy and catastrophizing its side effects. Thus, while in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, the disastrous anti-fossil fuel proposals of benefit-ignoring, side-effect-catastrophizing designated environmental experts, proposals that would have prematurely ended billions of lives, were mostly mitigated by the knowledge system's valuing of energy, that protection is now missing in the mainstream knowledge system. We can see this today in the fact that our designated environmental experts are the number one shapers of energy policy. For example, the fossil fuel elimination policies of going net zero, fossil free, and 100% renewable were just a decade ago considered idealistic, if not crackpot, policies most prominently advocated by designated expert Bill McKibben and his organization 350.org. Today, they are the dominant policy idea in the world. The significant value our knowledge system once placed on cost-effective energy, our protection from energy-opposing, benefit-ignoring, side-effect-catastrophizing designated experts, no longer exists. Which means it's entirely possible that our knowledge system is taking us in just as unnecessary and catastrophic a direction as designated environmental experts wanted to take us decades ago, toward fossil fuel elimination policies justified by catastrophizing masterable side effects that shorten billions of lives, prevent billions from emerging from poverty, and thwart progress around the world. It also means that unless we are able to escape the systemic problems of our knowledge system, we will be totally clueless as to what the right path forward on fossil fuels is. To address these problems, we need to understand what causes them. Understanding both our knowledge system's energy failure and ours. We have seen that our knowledge system has become anti-energy and dysfunctional, to the point that it consistently seeks to eliminate cost-effective energy while ignoring its massive benefits, and that it consistently catastrophizes the side effects of cost-effective energy. What has caused this terrible state of affairs? One explanation we can rule out is factual ignorance. The leaders of our knowledge system, especially our designated experts, have all been exposed to myriad facts that should make them realize their approach to evaluating energy is drastically wrong. These include facts about the massive benefits of cost-effective energy to human flourishing, including its massive benefits to areas of concern such as safety from climate, environmental quality, and resource availability. Facts about the desperate lack of cost-effective energy around the world. Facts about the knowledge system's track record of promoting false catastrophe predictions over and over. Facts about our designated experts' track record of deadly energy prescriptions. If factual ignorance can't explain our knowledge system's energy failure, could the explanation be ignorance of method? Could it be that our knowledge system's leaders, including designated experts, are not aware that one should not support the elimination of a massive value while ignoring its benefits? Are they not aware that it's improper to catastrophize the side effects of something, including to ignore the ways in which human ingenuity can master those side effects? Of course not. Any highly educated person knows these things. For example, no one thinks it's a good idea to oppose antibiotics without considering their massive life or death benefits or to engage in catastrophizing of antibiotics. Yet this approach is exactly what happens with fossil fuels, only worse, because unlike antibiotics, fossil fuels' benefits clearly have an enormous ability to neutralize and overwhelm their own negative side effects, including climate side effects. If ignorance of facts or of proper methods of evaluation cannot explain our knowledge system's support of energy elimination policies, its ignoring of benefits, and its catastrophizing of side effects, what can? Before I answer this question, let me make it even more difficult and urgent by asking a question that was uncomfortable for me and may be uncomfortable for you as well. Why do so many of us engage in many of the same irrational methods of evaluation as our knowledge system when we should know better? Take the issue of supporting the elimination of fossil fuel use while ignoring its benefits, including the benefits to the billions of people who lack cost-effective energy. I'll use myself as an example. Why, for so long, before I studied energy and the issue hit me over the head, did I not think about the billions of people who lacked energy and might enormously benefit from fossil fuels? Of course, I, like most people, knew that the world has a lot of poor people and that poverty is in some way connected to a lack of things that use energy, like factories and hospitals and grocery stores and refrigerators and automobiles. Yet that issue was nowhere near top of mind when I heard proposals to rapidly eliminate fossil fuel use. Another area of cost-effective energy's benefits in general, and fossil fuels' benefits in particular, that I ignored when I should have known better, was fossil fuels' climate mastery benefits. Why, when thinking about what to do about potentially catastrophic climate change, did I not think about the fact that clearly we human beings are really good at protecting ourselves from climate danger compared to the past? And that clearly, climate protection involves using a lot of energy and machines, so that fossil fuels could potentially prevent major climate danger, and eliminating fossil fuels could actually increase climate danger. Whether or not my specific examples resonate with you, I think most of us, if we reflect, can see that we ourselves engage in, or at least are way too tolerant of, our knowledge system's irrational method of supporting the elimination of fossil fuels while ignoring their benefits. Or take our knowledge system's consistent catastrophizing of side effects. I'll again use myself as an example. Why was I, before learning the full history of catastrophizing made the issue unavoidable, inclined to believe catastrophe predictions even though I knew, as most of us know, that many of these catastrophe predictions have come false? Why was I inclined to trust the institutions that kept publicizing these predictions and never seemed to apologize when they were wrong or reflect on what led them to be wrong? Why did catastrophe predictions often feel right? So much so that even if catastrophic climate change predictions or catastrophic resource depletion predictions or catastrophic pollution predictions have come false in the past, it feels like they have to come true sooner or later. Again, I think most of us, upon reflection, can see that we, like our knowledge system and designated experts, have a tendency to engage in catastrophizing or at least be sympathetic to and tolerant of it. Finally, if most of us were not at least sympathetic to the mainstream knowledge system's irrational methods of evaluation, we would have already rebelled against this system's treatment of fossil fuels. We wouldn't continue to choose to use it as our primary gateway to expert knowledge, and yet most of us do. So, the urgent question to answer is not just, what is going wrong with our energy-opposing, benefit-ignoring, side-effect-catastrophizing knowledge system, but also, what is going wrong with the rest of us, the consumers and, to a significant degree, the emulators of our knowledge system? If we can't understand the underlying cause of why our knowledge system is engaging in irrational methods of evaluating energy when it should know better, and why we ourselves are susceptible to those irrational methods of evaluation when we should know better, then we are not going to be able to fix these problems. Which means that, as a species, we are absolutely going to make some terrible and potentially catastrophic energy policy decisions. And that as individuals, there is no way we are going to be able to identify what the right path forward on fossil fuels is, including finding experts who are not compromised by whatever is causing our knowledge system's energy failure. So, what does explain our knowledge systems and our energy failure if ignorance can't? What is the underlying cause that needs to be corrected? The answers lie in the subject that is considered the least practical, but that I chose for my profession because I consider it the most practical: philosophy.